Chapter 11. Valkyrie arriving in orbit threw the planet into an uproar. From her front yard, the Burgermeister and I made an official announcement with one of her security team holding the phone. Even with an image stabilizer on the phone's camera, the video was shaky. The poor guy was freaking out about the situation. That announcement kicked off 3 whirlwind days of meetings for me. My first stop was at UNEF HQ in Lemuria, where the reactions I got were mostly WTF the first day, then asking whether it was really true that the wormhole to Earth was open on the second day, and finally asking my plans for paradise on the third day. My responses were that WTF was entirely appropriate. Even I could barely believe some of the shit that the Merry Band of Pirates had gotten into over the years. Yes, there is a wormhole open that is close to Earth, closer than the original wormhole. If people wanted more details about that, I said it is a long story. The future of paradise was not my decision. Hopefully, the Ruha would allow humans to occupy Lemuria, both for humans who wanted to remain on their adopted world and for new troops shipped out from Earth. The Ruha federal government would need to balance the benefits of providing a forward base for a powerful potential ally with the risk that the presence of humans on paradise could make that world a target. Even the Burgermeister was unsure of how she felt about humans living on her world. The presence of humans on the planet was not quite a mistake, but an accident of history that was certainly not planned by the Ruha. Perhaps now that humans again had access to their own homeworld, it was time to reset the clock and leave paradise to the Ruha. If UNEF still wanted a forward base for staging alien legion operations, there were plenty of other planets available in the galaxy. Anyway, the point I tried to make was that decision was way above my pay grade. Normally, I hate passing the buck, but in that situation, it was entirely appropriate. One of the first actions we took was to fly the Keepers down to the surface. No way was I going to put them first in line for the trip to Earth. While they were aboard Valkyrie, I heard stories of their experiences after they left Paradise. Captivity, abuse, terror. Most of them realized pretty quickly that they had made a horrible mistake, but there was no turning back. A handful of Keeper knuckleheads still believed the Lizards were our saviors and rightful allies. That kind of stubborn refusal to recognize the truth verges on mental illness, and instead of being angry, I hope they got the help they needed. On the afternoon of the third day following Valkyrie's dramatic arrival, a Jarraptha cruiser jumped into orbit to conduct a recon and get clearance from the local authorities. Shortly after, a Jarraptha star carrier appeared on the outskirts of the star system, its pylons laden with 6 transport ships. The transports had capacity for almost 25,000 humans, though crews were still working to modify the accommodations for human needs. We cautioned prospective passengers that conditions would not be luxurious, and that did not at all dampen enthusiasm for those who were lining up for a trip home. On the morning of the fourth day, the Alien Legion flagship Sure Thing jumped into orbit, carrying the Mavericks and about 200 troops. Perkins told me the remainder of the Legion force would be following in 2 days, the operation on Tomarin having been wrapped up nicely, with Admiral Cacrondo taking charge of the military situation while a bunch of hateful clan leaders backstabbed each other to establish who would own the planet. The Legion did not care who won that battle, and neither did I. What was the nicest part of the reunion for me? Well, I got to meet Lester Cornhut again. He now owned a brewery with Dave Chaika. Lester and Mrs. Cornhut and the little Cornhuts were all doing fine, except the little Cornhuts were not so little anymore. There was a ceremony in my honor which I endured. Then most residents of the still tiny village of Teskor joined us for a cookout in Lester's backyard. Cheeseburgers. They had cheeseburgers. Sure, the beef was grown in a lab, and the ketchup flavor was a bit unusual, but they were genuine cheese burgers, and I ate 3. Yes, that was nice. The really best part of my return to paradise was simple. Dave, Jesse, and I went to visit our old fireteam leader, Greg Koch. A former sergeant had become a farmer on Lemuria, a successful farmer who grew specialty crops for both humans and Ruha. The 4 of us hung out for a blissful afternoon, sitting on Koch's porch, drinking beer, and watching a thunderstorm roll in from the ocean. That was one of the best days I've had in years. Instead of me answering endless questions, the four of us were just able to chill and tell old stories. Unlike most of the awestruck people on Paradise, the three of them were not impressed with me. They knew I could be an idiot. Still, when it was time to leave, he asked me to call him Greg, which felt weird. He pulled me aside while Jesse and Dave walked out to the waiting Panther.
Joe, Greg slapped me on the shoulder. I always knew you would turn out okay, but damn, he grinned. You did some serious overachieving. Dave and Jesse, too, he added in a whisper. You guys all did good. Makes me proud. You did good yourself.
I looked around the neat fields of whatever he was growing. Tell me, what are your plans?
I don't know, Joe.
He shrugged, looking lost for the first time I had ever seen.
I want to go home, see my folks. After that,
he gazed out across the fields, back at the house he had built mostly by himself.
I put a lot of work into this place. It would be nice to share it with someone, and
he shook his head.
It's not easy to find a woman here.
He looked away, embarrassed.
You know?
I know. When he looked at me questioningly, I held up my hands. I've been CO of a ship. It gets lonely.
Yeah,
he nodded.
I can see that.
Sir, I caught myself before addressing him by his former rank.
Greg, if you want to go home, you can be on the first transport ship. UNFHQ says there will be a lottery for berths aboard the transports.
What he said was true, or that was an idea being kicked around at headquarters. One major issue was that we did not have a firm commitment from the Gerapta for more than a single one-way mission by their transport ships. The governments of Earth would have to negotiate for use of those ships, especially if we wanted to keep the Alien Legion active. That issue also was above my pay grade, though I knew that I would be pulled into the discussions eventually. Screw that, I told him. Command is prerogative. His eyes narrowed.
Sure you want to pull strings like that?
If it weren't for you, I probably would have died in Nigeria, I said truthfully. Dave, Jesse, too. You kept our dumb asses out of trouble, long enough for us to learn how to stay out of trouble.
Except you didn't. All three of you went looking for trouble.
He shook his head slowly, but he had a big grin.
Joe, if you're serious about the offer, I'm not too proud to take it.
I'll have Skippy put your name first on the transport roster. Skippy, you heard that? Affirmative. His voice came from my Z-phone. Joe, if you're not going to be late, again, for your next appointment, you need to leave now. I stuck out a hand for a shake, but Greg Koch pulled me in for a bear hug. I hugged him back. Hoo boy! Valkyrie's arrival, especially our announcement that the wormhole to Earth was open, threw human society on Paradise into chaos. The disruption was not just from the thought of finally being able to go home and see their long-lost loved ones. It was also from the fact that many people had made new lives on their adopted planet, lives that included businesses and relationships, like marriages and children. That made the situation enormously more complicated. I heard from many people during my tour of Lemuria. Most of them were asking me what they should do. I told them the truth. I had no idea how to deal with their messy personal situations. Hell, I didn't know how to deal with my own messy personal situation other than the time-honored method of pretending the situation doesn't exist. That is denial for the win again! My life sucks. One guy, a former U.S. Army major who now ran a shipping company that transported goods between human settlements, looked completely lost when I talked with him.
I have, or had, he corrected himself, a wife and a daughter on Earth. Still have a daughter, he corrected himself again. Maybe a wife there still, too. I thought we could never go home again. We all assumed everyone on Earth was dead, that the lizards killed everyone. Now I'm married again here. My wife, my new wife, we have a son together. Ah, shit!
His face drained of color.
She was married on Earth, too. My wife, I mean. My current wife. Shit, new wife. Sir, what the hell should we do? All of us. I said, standing there like a complete moron. I had absolutely zero advice to give him, or his new wife, or his previous wife, or his new wife's former husband. It was also super helpful that Skippy was muttering in my ear.
Uh-oh, Joe, he whispered. This could be trouble. Major Suarez's wife on Earth never remarried. She set up an organization to advocate for the families of UNEF soldiers who never returned. Major Suarez was sort of a poster child in the beginning when the organization was being established. Suarez's new wife? Her ex-husband did get remarried. To her younger sister. They became close while consoling each other after UNEF declared the people off-world to be officially dead so they could stop paying accumulated salaries and benefits.
I forget what I said to Suarez.
It could not possibly have been anything intelligent. Multiply his story by over 100,000 people, and you might have some idea about the scope of the mess people were dealing with. It's true. The people on Paradise assumed the population of Earth was extinct, or at least horribly enslaved. That's what I had feared, too, when the Merry Band of Pirates first took the Flying Dutchman there. When we arrived, the White Wind Clan of the Lizards was well on their way to enslaving humanity and stripping Earth of resources. We know they had plans to, as they described it, reduce the human population of Earth to a more manageable level. Documents that Skippy recovered after we wiped out the White Wind indicated the Lizards thought the optimum population of human slaves was around 10 million. Everyone else would need to go so they didn't cause trouble, and so the Lizards didn't have to be concerned about feeding their useless mouths. Shit. I need to remember that every time I worry about being too harsh toward the Kristang warrior caste. Anyway, the humans on Paradise had painfully built new lives there, established businesses, most importantly, created new relationships. The weirdest part for me to learn about were the polyandrous marriages. Yes, I didn't say the word wrong or make it up. Polyandry. Google it, because apparently it was a thing even before the expeditionary force went to Paradise. I know you have heard of polygamy, like one lucky guy having more than one wife, or as my father says, that guy should be careful what he wishes for. Anyway, polyandry is the opposite. One woman married to multiple men. Okay, guys out there, you probably said, ew, like I did. Don't judge. Remember, when the Force left Earth, there were 7 men for every woman. That's what happens when humans deploy a military force that is heavy on infantry like the Kristang wanted. One thing I know about humans is we are adaptable. My point is, those relationships might not have been established on Earth, where the ratio between men and women is roughly 1-to-1. Yes, I know that not everyone is hetero, but the problem that the population of Paradise had to deal with was there were not enough women who like men for the number of men who like women. You might not be surprised to learn that a large percentage of polyandrous relationships began to break up soon after Valkyrie arrived. What surprised me was that a significant number of those relationships recommitted to each other, and that was actually kind of heartwarming to hear. Those people had found love and made a relationship work under very difficult circumstances, and it sure as hell was not any of my business how they found happiness. Besides, as Skippy would say, I couldn't even keep a relationship working with my shower, so I certainly should not be questioning how other people lived. On the subject of unusual marriages, I was speaking at a town hall meeting at some generic place in Lemuria, taking questions from the audience for about 2 hours. The event was broadcast all over the planet. UNEF HQ had selected that town because the people there were still mostly active-duty military and had been screened, so they wouldn't ask me any really difficult questions. That was the plan, anyway. Like most plans, it got thrown out the window pretty early, and I had to wing it as best I could. It helped that I announced a searchable database was just then available, containing recent information from Earth. The database was really one of Skippy's submines, but that didn't matter. People on Paradise could look up the recent status of friends and relatives and other news from back home. In most cases, it was good news. Inevitably, some people got information that was not good, even devastating. Loved ones back home had passed away while the Force was stranded on Paradise, or lovers had moved on,
or spouses had remarried. The rough adjustment to the new reality of people being able to come back home from paradise worked both ways. Anyway, the town hall ran way late, like an hour over schedule, and we had to cut people off with questions unanswered. The fact was, I didn't have answers for them. No one did. But they wanted to talk, and I felt bad that I could not address everyone's concerns. On the way out the door, one of my escorts pulled me aside. It was Captain Frey. She wanted me to speak with an unhappy-looking woman. Maybe unhappy is not the right word. She looked tired and lost.
How can I help you? I checked her name tag.
Staff Sergeant Vogel. Before answering, she patted her belly, which was just beginning to show.
Colonel, I don't know if you can help me. Probably no one can.
What's the issue? I asked, trying to maintain eye contact when all I really wanted to do was get out the door. We were late for the next event, a joint dinner with UNEF brass and Ruhar officials. While I was not looking forward to a formal dinner, I had been promised a tender and juicy lab-grown steak, and I was hungry.
She has three husbands, Captain Frey said in a tone she might have intended to simply be non-judgmental, but sounded more like she might be intrigued by the idea.
Oh. At that moment, I wished I was anywhere but there.
I can see how that could be complicated,
I responded with a neutral smile, hoping to get away.
How does that work? Frey asked with a bit too much interest. Not three of the same type of guys.
Of course, I opened my big, stupid mouth. Same type?
There's the hot guy who is unreliable and looks at himself in the mirror too often.
Frey ticked the categories off on her fingers, which made me suspect she had put way too much thought into the subject.
The nice guy who gives you foot rubs and actually listens when you talk, and the guy who fixes stuff around the house and is quiet so you think he's gentle. But in bed, he is a real...
Okay. I cut that short before she got into too much information territory. We get the idea, Captain.
It's not like that, Vogel sighed, shaking her head at Frey. Do you know what it's like keeping one man happy? Guys try to get along at first, but they are so jealous. Imagine dealing with three male egos.
Oh, Frey grunted agreement.
What really happens is hot guy and Mr. Fix-It eventually get into a fight and you try not to get caught in the middle. You have to throw both of them out, then you're left with the foot rub guy, only he was giving you foot rubs because he was playing the long game, waiting out the other men. When it's just the two of you, foot rub guy stops giving foot rubs and gets whiny and jealous. You throw him out and you have to start over.
Captain Frey, I said, desperate to get away from that conversation. The subject was uncomfortable, but mostly I wanted to get away before I said something stupid. Most of the time, I love listening to women talk because women fascinate me. The subject of discussion was unlikely to reveal good things about the character of men, and I was afraid I would get caught in the crossfire. This sounds like something that women should talk about with each other. Staff Sergeant, all I can tell you is reopening the wormhole to Earth is going to be disruptive to everyone. We will all have to adjust.
Some of us more than others. We...
She looked away for a moment.
We thought humans on Earth were dead. That this...
She patted her belly again.
Was our future.
I am probably focusing too much on people who would have a tough time adjusting, though those were the people we needed to help. The vast majority of people... Sorry, humans on Paradise... were overjoyed about the prospect of going home again, and all the news they heard about home was good. For about 80% of the human population there, their only concern was the lottery for the first group of transport ships. Some of the good news was good for me, personally. Back before I stole the Flying Dutchman to go renegade, a woman confronted me in a grocery store. Her son was trapped on Paradise, and she was upset that I wasn't doing anything to bring him home. Now I was. Gary Dell, formerly a staff sergeant with the U.S. 3rd Infantry Division, had priority space aboard the first transport ship to Earth whenever it was ready. I didn't have time to meet the guy,
All I did was send him a note about the time I met his mother and that I had asked her to please understand we were bringing her son home as soon as we could. Mostly, my job sucks. Mostly my life sucks. But sometimes I get to do something nice that makes it all worthwhile. Sooner than UNFHQ wanted, and not soon enough for me or the merry band of pirates, we reboarded Valkyrie and jumped away after making plans to meet the Mavericks and others at Earth. I won't bore you with the blah 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 details of the last stop on our galactic kick-ass tour, because we did not kick or kiss any ass there. The last stop on our tour was actually not in the Milky Way galaxy at all. It was in the Sculptor Dwarf galaxy. We went to the Beta site, again. Damn, it felt like I should have a card to punch every time I went to Avalon. 10 trips and the next one is free. Anyway, we took the civilians from Rikers aboard again, plus Hans Chotek and the other UN diplomats who I privately called the Three Stooges. To make the story short, we took everyone aboard. A handful of scientists begged me to let them stay on Avalon so they could continue to conduct research. Their biological and agricultural experiments would fall apart without constant tending, they argued, and all the research they had done would be for nothing. I understood and sympathized with their anxiety, but my decision was final. I could not in good conscience allow anyone to stay on Avalon, because I had no idea when or if the governments of Earth would sanction another flight out to the Beta site. With humanity possessing elder weapons, I worried that the sense of urgency to establish a Beta site would fade, which in my opinion would be a major mistake, but that is another issue above my pay grade. If you are interested in trivia, the last person to leave Avalon was Dr. Friedlander, who had to dash back to his tent for some personal item he forgot. I hope nobody left a stove on, because we were not coming back for that. Sims did a quick knock on the doorframe as she walked into my office. Maybe she knew I wasn't busy because she asked Skippy what I was doing, or maybe she heard the thump of a tennis ball as I tried to bounce it off a wall and into a bucket. Sir? XO. I pointed to a chair and dropped the ball in a drawer. What's up? We're flying straight home? She asked, with one eyebrow slightly raised. No more stops along the way? No scheduled stops, I replied, pointing to the t-shirt that was draped over a chair. On the back of the official souvenir tour shirt, it had Avalon listed as the last stop. That's good. Except we'll be pinging a Theranan relay station for info. Well, that's not really a stop. That's like pulling the tour bus off the highway to get donuts, she agreed. It doesn't count. How is Frank? I asked, to show her I was concerned. He's fine. She wasn't interested in small talk. Sir, you need to make a decision soon, before we get to Earth. This isn't about what to make for dinner tomorrow night, I asked hopefully. No. Shit. I know. This is about the Elder weapons, right? It's about control of those weapons. She held my gaze, not letting me off the hook. Yeah. What are you going to do? Right now? I'm considering my options. Picking up the tennis ball, I lofted it to bounce off the wall and into the bucket. It hit other balls already in the bucket and bounced out to roll across the floor toward my feet. I've been doing this. I trapped the ball under a foot and bent down to toss it again. That time, it bounced up but rolled around the rim and stayed in the bucket. To help me think. Have you made any progress? Not much, I admitted. This isn't easy, I added in my defense. Do you have any advice for me? This is your decision, sir. Throw me a bone, okay? The way I see it, you only have two options. Obey orders from UNEF Command or go rogue again. UNEF is not what I'm worried about, I explained. The Army will demand I turn over control to NCA, I said sourly. That acronym, National Command Authority, essentially meant the President of the United States. Control and release of strategic weapons belonged to NCA, and certainly not to any Mustang colonel. Especially not a jackass colonel who had regularly demonstrated questionable judgment and a lack of proper respect for the chain of command. Sims tapped the American flag on her uniform top. We do wear this, sir. I know. The problem is, it's bad enough that one monkey has control of those horrific weapons. The more people who have access to the triggers, the more likely it will be that the weapons will be used. If America has access, the Chinese will demand equal access, and I can't say they're wrong about that. If the situation were reversed,
if you somehow retain control, the Chinese will have the same problem. You are still an American Army officer.
Yeah.
6 days, sir.
She glanced at her phone.
If we stick to the schedule, we will arrive at Earth in 6 days. I would appreciate a heads up about your decision either way.
Don't worry, XO. I won't spring any more surprises on you.
Please don't.
From under her chair, she plucked a tennis ball that had gotten away from me.
I'll let you get back to your thinking, sir.
I had lied to Sims. Not one of my usual lies by simply not telling her something important. That was flat-out lying. It wasn't a vicious lie. The fact was, I had made a decision before she asked me. My stupid brain maybe didn't want to consciously acknowledge that I had decided, but really I didn't have any choice. No, that's not correct. I didn't have a good choice. Not a perfect choice. My decision came down to choosing between options that all made me uneasy. All I had to do was judge which option was the least bad. In my cabin, I sat on the couch and removed my uniform top. Instead of putting it away in a closet or tossing it into the basket for Skippy's little laundry bots to handle, I carefully folded it and placed it on my lap. Skippy, I called him. His avatar appeared, standing on a table. Yes, Joe?
I have two family names on my uniform.
He cocked his head at me. Bishop, I see that. But unless you somewhere have a secret symbol for the Royal Brotherhood of Knuckleheads, I'm trying to be serious, Skippy. Sorry. He knew I was upset. The old Skippy might have continued joking around. The new, improved Skippy only nodded for me to continue. Bishop. I pointed to the right side of the SFU top. The Army had switched to the standard field uniform before we left Earth the last time, and for all I knew, a different regulation uni had replaced it already. The Army liked to change uniform designs every few years just to screw with soldiers who had to buy all new gear. My other family name is here. I pointed to the left side. It says U.S. Army. My eyes welled up with tears. I had to blink and wipe my face with the back of a hand. I understand. Skippy nodded slowly. Carefully, I peeled away the U.S. Army tag away from the Velcro backing, smoothed it flat, and placed it on the table in front of Skippy. What are you doing, Joe?
I am resigning my commission.
Whoa. Seriously?
I would never joke about something like this, Skippy.
I believe you. May I ask why you are resigning? You complain about the Army all the time, but
all soldiers complain. It's part of the job. Listen, the Army can be a giant, clumsy, slow-moving bureaucracy that is absolutely maddening to deal with. When I was in Nigeria, most of the time I had no clue why we were there or what the mission objectives were. Half the time my pay gets screwed up, and there is always some stupid form I have to fill out that makes no sense at all. But damn it. The Army is my home, you know? My other family. When the Army gets itself straightened out and pointed in the right direction, we kick ass. I know everyone is proud of their country, their service. This, I tapped the name tag, is mine. Or it was.
Joe, you didn't answer my question. Why are you resigning your commission? Why now? You committed mutiny and stole a starship, and you didn't resign then.
We didn't have incredibly dangerous elder weapons back then.
Ah.
He took off his ginormous hat and pretended to scratch his head.
You agree that a bunch of screeching monkeys should not have control of those weapons?
Yeah. I don't think the governments of Earth should have the burden of controlling those weapons. They are just one more set of sticks for monkeys to whack each other with. Military personnel should not interfere with politics. If I choose which country or countries have access,
I will be playing politics, whether I intend to or not.
Okay, I agree. What is your solution?
You are not, he gasped.
You're not leaving the ship, are you? Joe, you can't leave me. Not now.
No, I'm not leaving the ship. This is how I can stay with the pirates, to make sure I can stay. If I'm in the army, they can order me to take a job dirtside.
You will not be a military officer, he said slowly, as if he were still rolling the idea around in his head.
But you intend to continue in command of the ship. How will that work?
What's the process to get citizenship in Skipistan?
What?
If I wanted to become a citizen of Skipistan, what are the requirements?
Well, you need references, of course, to assure that you are a person of good character, unless you have a truckload of money, in which case I don't care who.
How about you be my reference?
That is most unusual.
Also, I hang around with bloodthirsty pirates and people like you. Maybe I am not the best person to provide a refer- Let's pretend you are, and move on.
Okay. Well. This is kind of awkward. Joe, your financial profile does not match the usual applicant. I am sorry to say that there is really no way you can afford to give me the substantial investment capital needed to apply for citizen. How about I give you nothing, and you give me full citizenship?
You drive a hard bargain. I have to respect that. Yes or no?
Joe, why would you want to be a citizen of Skipistan, other than the obvious prestige of being associated with me?
Yeah, that's why. I rolled my eyes. You didn't answer my question.
Does Skipistan have armed forces?
My goat herder, Salkat, has a shotgun to keep wolves away from the goats, but he sold most of the shells to buy vodka, so...
So the answer is no.
Skippy, I would like to be the leader of your armed forces.
What?
Hear me out. In the 1930s, Douglas MacArthur resigned from the U.S. Army to be the leader of the Philippine Armed Forces. He didn't surrender his American citizenship to do that.
That was rather different, Joe. The Philippines were basically an American territory back then. Skipistan is an independent, sovereign republic that...
Skipistan is a goat farm, I snorted.
Okay, I really can't argue with that, except we also have sheep and a yak.
Like, that makes a huge difference.
Let me see if I understand. You want to become a citizen of Skipistan and dual citizenship.
I tapped the American flag on my uniform top. No way will I ever give up my U.S. citizenship, Skippy.
Understood. You will be a dual citizen and commander of my armed forces?
Yes. As an officer in the Skipistan Army, I will not be answerable to anyone but you.
Oh. Oh, wow. Then I could give orders to you? Cool! That...
No, absolutely not.
Well, that hardly seems fair. As head of state, I should have the ability to...
Let's just say that you are outsourcing all the boring military stuff to me so you can focus on whatever it is you do.
Interesting. How about I conduct your annual performance evaluation?
How about instead you can put notes into a suggestion box?
Okay. Will you promise to read the notes?
There is zero chance of that, Skippy.
Then what good is a suggestion box? He screeched, throwing up his little hands.
It makes you feel better to write notes. Plus, if I do anything stupid that a note would have warned me against, you can feel all righteous that you told me so.
Can I write the notes after you do something stupid?
If that makes you feel better about it, sure.
Deal! Wow, this is surprising. Oh, I will need to design a series of uniforms for you. Nothing to...
The uniforms I have now are fine, Skippy. I'll just change a couple of patches.
That's a problem. The U.S. military has a design patent on the digital camo pattern for your SFUs. I would have to pay a fee to license the...
I'm sure you can work something out.
That's easy for you to say, numbskull. Do you have any idea what a pain in the ass it is to negotiate with the Pentagon? It would take years to...
Or
You can alter the digital pattern and make your own design. I don't care. Just do not make any major changes. How about I tweak the service uniform? That olive drab color is awful, Joe. Do we have to have this conversation? I sighed. Yes, he sniffed. You will be representing me, Joe. As you know, I have impeccable taste and the highest standards for... Fine. If you don't like the olive, you can make new service uniforms for me with that blue color the Army was talking about switching back to. The Army had switched from a dark green to an olive drab color for service unis around the time I signed up. The last time I was on Earth, there was talk of switching back to the blue that was used in the early 2000s. Personally, I didn't care what color I wore, except fashion designer Skippy was not going to dress me up in a gaudy outfit like his avatar had. I will have designs for you in the morning, Joe, he babbled excitedly. Ooh, this is going to be great, except, you can't be a lowly colonel. Colonel is a field officer rank. There is nothing lowly about it. Seriously, you need to be at least a 3-star general. No. If I use this change as an opportunity to promote myself, everyone will laugh at me. But you will be outranked by no one, Skippy. I'm a colonel now, and I'm staying that way. Joe, this aw shucks humbleness bullshit is getting old. Fine. If my rank becomes a problem, I will consider a change. For now, can you make a couple of Velcro back patches for me? One with the flag of Skippistan and one that says Skippistan Army, or something like that? The chest patch will be GPR Skippistan, Joe. GPR? Yes, Glorious People's Republic of Skippistan. Ugh, how can you be a proud, loyal citizen of our nation if you don't know the basic facts about our history and culture? I really should give you a citizenship knowledge test. History and culture of your fake country? Hey, how dare you insult the... I know that the founder of our nation is an asshole shithead. Is that close enough? I'm grading on a curve, so... He shrugged. Sure. Great. Can you crank out those patches quickly? I want to announce that I intend to make this change at dinner tonight. The crew deserves several days to think about it before we return to Earth. No problem. If you like, I can send in a bot to do the job for you. Removing the symbols from your service uniform will be more difficult. I would not like. I'm not removing the patches from all my uniforms until my resignation is official. This is something I have to do myself, Skippy, you understand? Yes, I think so. The new patches will be delivered within 20 minutes. Thanks. Setting down the uniform top I had been wearing, I dug a t-shirt out of a drawer, then went to the closet. Shit. One thing I hadn't considered was all the ribbons on my dress uniform. We called those rows of ribbons a salad bar or fruit salad, depending on what slang was popular at the time. I had earned campaign ribbons for service in Nigeria, on Paradise, and aboard the Flying Dutchman. Also, I had a few commendations, including one for good conduct, which the Army probably regretted awarding to me after I committed mutiny. My problem was those ribbons were all awarded to me by the United States Army. Did I have any right to wear them while in service to a foreign military? A military of a country that basically existed only on paper, despite what Skippy said? The answer was no. Assuming I would receive that glorious DD Form 214 stating that I have been honorably discharged from duty, then I can add that new ribbon on the top left of the salad bar and wear those as a veteran. But I couldn't wear any U.S. ribbons while on active duty in Skippistan. What the hell was I doing?